anyone else have a question?
You can just ask. You don't have to like raise hands or anything. We're just all hanging out in my living room, basically, right? You should order pizza. Well, this is a crazy thing. I've always considered myself, and some of you can find this really weird, I've always considered myself a writer who dabbles in art. It was never my intention to be an artist, per se. I mean, I had some artistic talent. I'm not a natural artist. I struggle with everything I do, and I hate everything I do. But at the time when I started in comics, which is the 70s, there were only 35 comics being published by both companies. You had to literally wait for someone to die to get a book. Or actually kill them, which I wasn't prepared to do. Fortunately, a lot of those old golden age guys are getting pretty old, you know? But so most of us worked as apprentices for years to establish artists, and that's how we got our training. What's really funny is one of the Iron Man stories that I'm best known for is a thing called Doom Quest, which is Dr. Doom and Iron Man in the days of King Arthur. And I told you about my Arthurian passion when I was a kid. I actually wrote that story when I was 11 years old on notebook paper. I drew the whole thing on notebook paper. I wish I had kept it. It would be worth a fortune right now, it was a story I came up with way back then. And then one day when David and I were co-planning the book, I just happened to mention it. And he was, I love that. So never throw any of your ideas away either. It's something I came up with 11 years old turned out to be like a classic Iron Man story now. So this goes to show you. But for the first time I started working professionally, I got involved with the writers in terms of plotting. You'll find very few books where I just did the art. Because to me, the story is everything. The story is everything. All my mentors always said that we are all slaves to the story. That's the axiom they used. Every aspect, letterer, colorist, penciler, inker, everyone should be a slave to the story. And I believe that. So, like you said, you go back way back in my career, you'll see that I'm involved with the plots and stories from almost the very beginning. Because most guys wrote at least 2 books a month. There were like 5 writers of Marvel writing all 15 books, So I couldn't get a book of Marvel, You couldn't get a book of DC, but they needed artists all the time because they were expanding. So I concentrated on the art aspects, getting in and figuring that when the time was right, learn as much as I can, ask a lot of questions, learn everything I can about the medium I'm in. And when the time was right, I would, venture out on my own and start writing, which I did with Hercules, the very first miniseries ever done in comics. It was a very stupid story, but it was fun. There was a lot of drinking involved. I pushed the limits of the Comic Code Authority a few times, but I wanted to do something funny. I mean, I'm a big fan of romantic comedies, which they don't really make a lot of anymore. And, part of me, there's always that comedic side of me that wants to do that kind of stuff. So I went from Demon in a Bottle to something as goofy as Hercules in space, with a transvestite and a robot, but that's me, So, it was always my goal to be writer-artist, okay? But if I had a choice between the two, I would rather write, quite honestly, because I think the story is everything. I mean, we're sitting here for a while. I mean, you guys are not fans of my art. Most of you aren't. You're fans of the stories that I created, the stuff that's been translated to the screen, the characters that we've created, right? The complexity and the humor and all that kind of stuff, that's the heck with my art. That's not what it's about, right? It's about the fact that Tony Stark is a hilarious yet tragic figure. It's no accident. And that's... So, to me, the story was everything. So, I broke in as an artist, but, I basically... Because at Valiant, I did mostly writing. The comic company I helped found in the 90s, most of my work was as a writer. So, there you go. And now I work as a screenwriter. So, it's like, I hardly draw at all anymore. That's what comic cons are nice for. I get to draw once in a while. You know, I get to doodle, as my mom said. My mother never understood. My mother was kind of a simple woman. She was from Kentucky, so she talks like this. I mean, the only person I can do is my mom. I can do Carly. And mama's, people ask, well, what does your son do? She goes, my son's a doodler. I told him to get a real job, and he never did. You know, I bought her a house with the, you know, the money and value. And she's like, wow, you can make a lot of money doodling. And in 2008, she saw Iron Man. And it finally clicked. 35 years later, it clicks. She goes, that's what you've been doing all this time. I really like that. So it took 35 years for my mom to figure out what I was doing for a living. You know? But even buying the house didn't impress her. You know? So, yeah.
What was the dynamic with you and Dave making
Iron? You said it right.
I did?
Wow! You're the fourth person on the planet who's ever said it right.
Okay. Was it just working with them and, like, was it kind of like a Lennon McCartney thing where you just...
Yeah, it was a... I mean, obviously the visuals were me, you know? All the toys were me. But Dave and I, it was like a jam session. We would sit down. We would do it one way. We would have an annual meeting where we would plot out the next year. Much like a television series. We were like showrunners. We would figure out where we're going in 12 issues and have a macro story where we're heading, like Demon in a Bottle or Armor Wars or something like that. And then we would... Then month to month, we would sit down and we would plot out the individual stories and how it pushed us toward that macro story that we're heading for. You know, so and that's how we kind of work for the most part. He left the visuals to me and the designs and all that kind of stuff. You know, and he basically, but we did, because we would act stuff out. So a lot of the dialogue was both of us too, because, you know, it was like, you know, I would play Tony, he would play everybody else, because I have a smart mouth. You have figured that out by now. You know? And we would just kind of act it out. We, you know, we'd be one night, we lived in proximity to each other, so, you know, it worked out well that way. And like I said, Dave was a great teacher for me. You know, that's how I basically learned how to translate what I did into comics. You know, go out on my own as a writer. You know, that's why I finally left Iron Man and went out and get hurt. Who's texting? Oh, okay. I got options for dinner.
You just said you were going to do pizza with us.
But I'll spoil my dinner now. You know, I could. We could just make a video and just people shout out names of restaurants you think we should go to. I don't know. Okay, never mind. I was hoping it was somebody really funny that we could just put on camera. I've done that before. I had a girlfriend call me when I was on stage once, and I went ahead and took the call and put on FaceTime. I said, say hi to everyone, honey.
Kurt Frodo's got a compliment with his wife yesterday.
Yeah.
And he got
the panel. Yeah. There's been a couple times we actually called somebody, you know. We crank called one of my friends, you know.
Oh, yeah.
We won't do that. So did I answer your question?
Oh, yeah.
Is there any superhero that you'd like to write or draw for that you haven't done yet?
There were two. They're both DC characters, actually. Well, I don't work in comics anymore, first of all. You know that I haven't done a comic in 12 years, other than some covers once in a while. I do covers for Valiant because I found it helped out the company. I still feel like I'm kind of responsible for their behavior to some degree. But the first comic I ever read, holy, I was 4 years old. First comic I ever read was something called Challengers of the Unknown. And it was about four guys who, their plane crashed. They didn't know each other. They were on a commercial plane. They crashed. But they were the only four guys who survived. And they were all, just happened to be, all very adventurous types, okay? You know, one was a, you know, professional scuba diver, and one was a professional boxer, and another one I think was a professional needlepoint guy or whatever. You know, No, but the idea was their watches all stopped at the moment they crashed. So this became like their symbol, the hourglass. You know, it was like they felt from this moment on they were living on borrowed time. And so they decided to become Indiana Jones, like a team of Indiana Joneses, and go out and solve all the great mysteries of the world and take the incredible chances and all this kind of stuff, which also my love for non-powered characters came from that, you know? But I was 4 years old, and I bugged my sister Sue. I said, I could tell what was happening, because this was Jack Kirby and Wally Wood doing this, okay, two of the greatest storytellers of all time. And I could tell from looking at the pictures what the story was. But I was so intrigued to know what was going on in the balloons that I asked my sister to teach me how to read from it. So, to the point where, by the time I started school, I was reading proficiently, because as you know, the vocabulary in comics is a little higher than a lot of Dick and Jane, right? So they get me a grade, which I thought was really great. I mean, but graduating high school at 17 sucks, okay? Because we're not old enough to do anything yet. So that part was bad. But yeah, I actually, but that put the hook in me. From that point, you know, the power of the medium had its hook in me. And I decided that I didn't have an astronaut or fireman or policeman's fate. I was wanted to tell stories, you know, pictures and words, you know. That was my life. You know, it's been that way ever since. So, you know, it could be like I'm fixated too. I don't know. You know, I mean, I could have been a great astronaut. I don't know. I'm not afraid of heights or anything. You know, but yeah. So, I wanted to do Challenges of the Unknown. I actually went to DC a couple times and pitched a revamp of the Challenges, a more modern version, and they turned me down. All right. And then they have a character called Adam Strange that I used to read as a kid, okay? Adam Strange was, okay, this is, again, it was the 60s, okay? But he had a really cool suit with the, like, fin on it, you know? And he had a Scrooge gun and all this stuff. And he had a jetpack and all this stuff. Now, he was an archaeology guy who got hit by a teleportation beam that sent him to another galaxy where he would be there for, like, 3 days. He has this girlfriend who's, like, really, really hot. But he never gets to kiss her or touch her or anything because he always fades. The beam wears off and he goes back to Earth. But he has to fight giant tennis shoes and vacuum cleaners and stuff like this, you know, until the beam wears off. And then he comes back to Earth and he has to wait like 28 days or something. I always wondered if there was some sort of significance to that. You know, it was like some sort of cosmic menstrual cycle or something, you know. But when, as a kid, you know, you grow up, you read as a kid, you thought it was so cool, right? He'd go up there and he'd fight the giant vacuum cleaners and all that kind of stuff, and then, boom, he'd go back to Earth, and he would just go back to being a college professor. And I always looked at the other side of it. You got a college professor who says he every 28 days he zaps to another galaxy and fights giant vacuum cleaners, okay? Not only that, because of the rotation of the Earth, he has to be somewhere at the specific site where the beam's going to hit. So he has to put on his suit and go stand in the middle of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And I just said, I wanted to do something like I did with Hercules. I wanted to do something that was a comedy based on this really silly thing as an adult. That I mean, as a kid, I thought it was cool. As an adult, I looked at it as totally silly, and I thought it would make a great comedy to do. Adam Strange, perfect name for a guy who behaves oddly. I was actually kind of at the college having locked up at one point for being like insane, you know? Because there's no way to prove that he goes to Iran and fights giant vacuum cleaners, you know?
I always
wonder
how
to get around. Yeah! Well, he's a tenured professor, you know, I'm sure, and he's an archaeologist. I mean, we you know, Indiana Jones guy. Great, but yeah, how does he BS his way and send me to a mountaintop in Peru because the Zeta Beam's going to be there, right? You know? And I just thought that the other 28 days would be way more entertaining than the fighting the giant vacuum cleaner stuff, you know? And, you know, if I was him, the first thing I would do was I would skip the vacuum cleaners and go right to the girlfriend, okay? Because, you know, it's like he never got to consummate his great love with her ever because they just about to kiss and he would fade away. They do that like almost every episode, you know? And as a kid, that's really frustrating, you know? A kid in the 60s, really frustrating, you know? So I wanted to do a comedy based on that. And they looked at me like I was insane. How dare you, like, violate the canon of our beloved character who fights giant vacuum cleaners and cosmic tennis shoes, you know? It's like, So I never did it.
Did you ever draw any of like your own, just like when you're at your desk one night and you're just like, oh, I'll draw a little
No, I'm more thinking about the story than drawing it. You see, as I said, that's the writer in me was always thinking. I actually wrote proposals for these things. I mean, when I went to pitch them, there were written proposals for Adam Strange. You know? It was called Mystery on Earth instead of Mystery in Space because everybody was wondering what's wrong with Adam, you know? Because Adam acts weird. You know? I mean, and that's, you know, that was the great thing about being an adult, remembering this stuff fondly from your childhood, just flipping the switch, you know, flipping the around, and it all seems really, you know, I mean, come on, how many things have you watched as an adult that you loved as a kid, and you say, well, this is really stupid, you know? You know? You have a different, you know, mindset. I show this stuff that you watched 4 years ago that you think is dumb now. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But dumb could be good. You see, that's my point. That can be really good. You know, so, yeah, those are the two I wanted to do. That'll never happen now.